What's up and welcome to the Kind of Funny Games cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Tim, whatever happened to the woman who did the overly attached girlfriend meme? I know she like tried to parlay it into other stuff too. Did that work out?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it worked out pretty well for her. She had a very successful YouTube channel. I haven't seen her for a while, but I imagine she's still kicking. Probably has approximately like 10 to 20 times the subscribers we do. So
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm sure
she's going to be
both our channels combined, you know.
I'm gonna look into it. You introduce the other people.
She probably went into like activism, I believe. So she's doing great stuff over there.
She's doing real good stuff. Yeah. Of course, we have the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
Pleasure to be here, Tim. Really glad to talk about video games.
For a second, I thought your hoodie strings were like beads. I was like, that's a weird choice, Andy.
I don't have a puka shell or anything like that. No. Yeah. Like that. I mean, you think you would with that mustache of yours.
You're fancy. I don't notice the mustache, honestly. It doesn't look that different. It looks like Andy.
Well, I mean, once this starts to come in like natural, it'll be fine. But yeah, I shaved the mustache for charity.
It looks great. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Greg. I'm waiting for the rest of it to grow in because.
What is a typical beard growth period for you?
A typical beard growth period for me, I say probably 5 to 7 days from now, it'll be back to normal. It grows back slow, I feel. It grows back pretty slow.
Real quick to close it to Lena here has 1.227 million subscribers on YouTube.
Her last video
was a year ago called I'm Breaking Up With You. And it said my last video. So it's 50, wow. No, that's I was going to say it's 50 seconds long. That's the Howie Long ad beforehand. Sorry. I'll get back to you with how long this video is. I'm going to mute you guys and find out what happened.
Doing exhaustive research over there.
Exactly. While you do that, Greg, while Greg is on it, I would like to introduce the former informer, Imran, the Don Khan.
Hi. Hello. It's good to you know, when you go back to somewhere you used to live and be like, yeah, no, everything's exactly the same. I'm just going to like kick my feet up, but you don't live there anymore. So you got to be like a little bit more polite. That's right now.
You don't got to be more polite. We just gave you shit for changing your camera angle just a little bit. And it's like, who the fuck do you think you are, big shot?
I told you wouldn't last 2 weeks there, Imran. I'm glad you're back.
That's how you get to 2 million subscribers is you change your camera angle often so nobody knows what to expect.
Lena has
it right, even though I've not looked at her channel at all, so I have no idea if this theory passes.
Yeah. That, you know what they say, consistency is not key. That's
verified on Instagram.
Guys, surprise everyone.
Oh, yeah. Imran, how have you been? How has the last couple of weeks been for you with a new fancy job?
I've been good. I've been spending every day way more exhausted than I thought because I've not worked really for like a year and a half. So it's that muscle of like, oh shit, people actually do stuff during the day. I can't just sit around and like watch whatever. I was watching Burn Notice before the job started. I can't just watch Burn Notice all day. I got to like actually do stuff. And then like, I don't know what to do with the rest of my day. So it's like, oh, I guess I'll just, you know, lay in bed and think about video games or read about video games in a way that does not involve me actually working on these things.
I don't think there's a better show you could have named. I could have gone along more with like, you know, working part time, but also like mostly unemployed. Like watching Burn Notice is the perfect thing you could have said.
It really is. We love to waste our time here on the Kind of Funny Games cast that you can watch for free on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or roosterteeth.com. You can also get it as a podcast. Just search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Games cast and we'll be right there for you. If you want to get the show ad-free, live as we record it, and with the exclusive post show, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like our Patreon producers did. The nanobiologist, Tyler Ross, Joy, Joseph Oyusef, Trent Berry, Mizuki, Man Bear Paradox, Julian, the gluten-free gamer, Alex J. Sandoval, Sancho West Gaming, James Hastings, Elliot, and Casey Kern. Thank you. A new round of Patreon producers for the month of March. We appreciate you all very, very much. Like I was saying, you can watch the show on YouTube and all that stuff, or you can get the show on Patreon. But if you don't want to do any of that, doesn't matter. You're right here now, and we're going to get to it. This show is brought to you by Freshly. We'll talk about that later. Greg Miller, I want to hear about It Takes Two.
Oh, hey, everybody. I played It Takes Two with the one and only Lucy James from GameSpot because we lived together. And when they sent the invite, they were like, hey, we realize COVID sucks. If you can play local, that'd be great. And so my plan is to play through the obviously final version of the game with Jen, but Lucy and I can make content about it, and that's why we did that. And I'm on our channel, and we're over on GameSpot as well. I had high expectations for this one, high hopes for this one even, based on the fact that I really like Hazelight and what they've done. You know, I like Joseph Ferris. I like him when the fuck the Oscars, and I like his energy, and I like that he's an unabashedly excited game developer who's excited to make games and get out there and do stuff. You know, I played A Way Out with Kevin. We enjoyed it. I wasn't blown away by it. Back in the day, I played Brothers, I think, for, you know, for IGN Game of the Year kind of stuff. And so I've watched, you know, everything they're doing over there. And I thought A Way Out had a really cool idea of making this local co-op game and having people play through it and have the different things and yada, yada, yada. So when It Takes Two got announced or whatever, and obviously a cool trailer, cool song, and you start looking into it, it seemed like they were doing more. But to take the demo, they started off, you know, with a presentation and talked a lot about how
what this the fuck is this game? What are we looking at right now?
Do you not remember? Sorry, have you not looked into it before?
No, I have, but like, I didn't know that there was squirrels shooting bees.
So in the demo, the thing they talked about was that this is a romantic comedy, and it's crazy that nobody makes romantic comedy video games, which immediately I was like, well, they don't do that because comedy's really hard to pull off in games, right? Because comedy's all about what, Imran?
Timing.
Timing?
I asked Imran, please. All right, Andy? When I ask believe, for Ande, you get to say something.
Okay, I'm gonna call a friend. Andy Cortez, can you pick up real quick?
Ring a ding ding, Andy.
Hello. Hello.
Hey, Andy. So I'm on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I was just been asked a question by Greg Miller. What is comedy all about?
Timing. You see the extra timing. Length there? Yeah, like the extra
okay. I made it funnier. Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna answer C, timing.
That is correct. Final answer.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, so getting into it though, yeah, the basis of this game, right, is the fact that you play as a husband and wife. You have decided to get a divorce. You told your child you were breaking up and getting a divorce, and she goes and cries over two dolls she has made to represent both of you, and you both wake up as the dolls in this world where you have to work together to try to get back to your daughter, to try to get back to your real life.
That's grim as shit. Kids.
Huh?
Creepy as shit? Yeah, it's grim. Like,
oh, that yeah, is a, no, it's totally grim. Yeah. But it's that thing where they do it in a way like a romantic comedy movie would, where you don't feel that. Like, from the moment both characters wake up in these doll bodies, right? They're like, oh my God, what is going on? They understand the absurdity of what's happening. But once they meet the book we've seen running around in the trailers and in the, there's a first impressions up of me and Lucy actually with our Let's Play attached to it. The rules are set up pretty quick of what the, you know, the book's there. And he's the love doctor, and he's going to solve their problem and fix their relationship and make them realize what's going on kind of thing. And so you go and play through the game with a number of different co-op things. And, you know, what me from the presentation again, as Joseph was running through and being very animated and into it, was, you know, one of the things he brought up in his presentation was like replayability, and he's like, fuck replayability, kind of like the Oscars, right? Where he's like, games just shove collectibles and shit in there when we know, and he had a stat of like, you know, like you look at games and like whatever it is, only 65% of people beat it or 65% don't beat it, whatever it was. He's like, we didn't want to do that. We didn't want to just put stuff in there to put stuff in there. He's like, every one of these levels is crafted to get something out of every moment, whether it be the visual, whether it be the joke, whether it be the music, whether it be what you're doing. And every one of the levels, he's like, you know, don't, not everyone, but most levels don't double back to using a mechanic you've had before. So like, what, you know, stands out from my playthrough when Lucy and I were playing was, again, you've been shrunk down. So it's this weird mix of a rom-com, like You've Got Mail, but it's also Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, but it's also got this magic tinge to it because you've, you know, woken up in these weird bodies and are doing all these
Freaky
different things.
Friday.
Yeah, Freaky Friday. It feels like Mario, the platforming and stuff like that as you go around, or even more a Sackboy like that because you're going around adventuring. But on top of, you know, the double jump that you'll have or the dash one of you has and the other doesn't.
Like, oh,
you
get nice. Into these, now we're talking.
You get into these scenarios where you need to use that mechanics, that level's mechanics, right? And so in the first thing we were running through, and we got, you know, introduced to the vacuum cleaner that I had put back. I was playing as the husband that I had broken and that my wife had promised to fix. So we both had failed the vacuum cleaner. So the vacuum cleaner was mad at us and then being our antagonist throughout the level. And so as we run around and do the platforming, there were also sections of having to get sucked up the vacuum hose and then get shot across
across the way. So the one, you know, Lucy would have to grab it, aim it, shoot me up there. Then I would help Lucy get up there, and we would work co-op that way through it. Later on, the one that stands out to me was, you know, we needed to get this MacGuffin from the toolbox so that we could, you know, get back to try to get closer to our daughter. Obviously, we keep getting separated. You know, Lucy picked up the hammer and I picked up 3 nails. And so Lucy, I would throw the nails and embed them in the walls. Lucy would use the hammer then to swing from the nails and go. And like I had to be, you know, Johnny on the fly throwing the nails over and over again, recall them. Yes, Andy Cortez from kindoffunny.com.
Are you picking those roles on your own, or is it?
They're assigned to which one you play as. So there is the concept here that you could go and replay the game, and you know, the second time around, or you know, when I pick it up this next time, I could play as the mom and I would go through and do what Lucy did, which is not drastically but different from what I was doing, and different abilities from that. And so it is, one of the things Joseph said in the presentation was like, you know, this game isn't about jumping into it with a stranger on the internet. He's like, you could, but it's not a ping system. It's not point to this thing and highlight it. It is talking it out. And obviously that's what, you know, most, I think, people making multiplayer games say about their games or want to be their games. But it was awesome to be playing it locally with Lucy and having that moment of like, okay, hold on. 3, 2, 1. And then like I jump or she does the thing. And we're trying to work together to get over the thing. And then also solving a puzzle in tandem, or, you know, oh, can you come to this room? Yeah, hold on. I'm just got to get out of this very specific moment. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was well acted. I think it's really colorful. I think it's a blast to play. I think it's Hazelight's best work. And again, my expectations and hype for it were high and they were met with this demo. So I can't wait for it at the end of the month.
It's like the minute to minute gameplay more interesting, because like one of the issues I had with Way Out was I'm sitting there with someone with me and we're watching a cutscene together, and that's fine for like a minute, but more than a minute it starts getting like this little awkward thing of like, are we both just watching this in silence? So yeah. What is the cutscene to gameplay ratio basically?
Gameplay is you're doing more gameplay than you're watching. There are cutscenes, but I think what works to its advantage is being a comedy where it isn't that you need to be dialed in. It is very much that because A Way Out was grounded in reality, you know, it becomes watching a movie. Whereas this one, it is, you know, we're talking about why we failed the vacuum and how we're going to have to then thrown into having to work against the vacuum. Then there's, you know, the boss fight against the vacuum. Then you get out of there and you work your way a little bit further. And suddenly now we're in the tree and we're confronted by, as Tim was looking at, the squirrel gang that lives in the tree that's been stealing our things and putting them in there. And they're at war with the beehive or the wasp nest that I didn't take out like I said I would. And like there's these varying escalating situations. It is very much it delivers on what he said in the presentation of you're going to be met with new opportunities and new gameplay mechanics and things that keep you engaged. Not so much that, yeah, you're going to pick up your phone because number one, you want to be there for the joke and the story. But number two, you also want to understand, okay, wait, what was happening? Because then the thing we saw there at the end, right, going against the bees, you know, I get a little thing that shoots, I guess it's honey or something else that's explosive, but some kind of sticky thing that's explosive. And Lucy had a matchstick gun, right? So it's like you have to work that way to explode it and then use the honey to weigh down different physics puzzles and mechanics. Andy Cortez, number one games journalist.
Does it seem like you can play it with somebody who doesn't really play video games and they would get it?
You know, that was a question that was raised this morning on Kind of Funny Games Daily. We didn't get into it because we didn't do the preview on Games Daily. But one of the questions, I think it was from Druvenator, wrote in and was like, yeah, could you do this with somebody who doesn't play games? And that's always hard to say, especially, you know, me and Lucy playing so many games and knowing that right away. I would venture to guess, yes, it's forgiving for sure. You know what I mean? Okay. As you go through and you fall to your death and like you come back, and then, you know, when you are in a boss fight and you get knocked down, there's a little mini game of you are going to respawn, but if you tap, I think it's A or X or whatever it's going to be, it'll fill in quicker and get you back in the game quicker. And so like there are, as long as your partner's still alive, it's not like you're going to reset the whole thing. So there was this mechanic of getting you into it, and that kind of stuff doesn't happen until the end of the level, so you have a chance to get a feel for it and go. I would think that from what we played early on, the platforming stuff of it and the problem solving wasn't like super gamer intense, right? It wasn't super front facing on the challenge that you're gonna have to worry about it. I think it's forgiving enough that you could ease somebody in this to a partner who doesn't play games.
The gameplay we saw there and what you were saying, it seems like the gameplay itself is really varied. There's like every moment you're doing something different. Is there consistency and quality among the gameplay styles?
Yeah, you mean in terms of like level to level? like what I'm doing. Yeah, I thought
Were the things you were doing that like, ugh, this isn't really that great?
No, nothing overstayed. It's welcome. Nothing. And again, this is, for the record, I think it's a 2-hour long demo, maybe an hour and a half. We played an hour of it, and I did that thing, which I always think is the hallmark of a good game, where I'm like, let's stop. I've seen enough. I'm sold. I want to play this full thing. I don't want to keep ruining what I'm going to play at the end of the month kind of thing. But no, every one of the things we went through, I felt was like, all right, cool. What's the challenge of this? What is the you know, level mechanic here that we're going to get into and have to go figure out?
How long does it seem like it's going to be?
Hard to say. They didn't give a full rundown in the thing of like the number of different environments you're going to be. I don't think it's going to be outrageous. You know, me and Kevin beat a way out in one sitting, and I forget how many hours that was. I could do a quick Google, or somebody else could. I think it's going to be on par with that in terms of you're going to go through, you're going to get this story, and then, you know, if you're going for, I guess, the platinum, or just you want to get your money's worth out of it, doubling back and doing it again.
I'm really interested in what Joseph was saying about the idea of the moment-to-moment gameplay mattering more than like collectibles and things like that. And even though there were definitely collectibles in it, I feel like Astro's Playroom did a really good job of that, of making every single thing that you're doing worth just doing that one time you're going through. And it didn't feel like you had to like worry about collecting things, because they're always kind of on your path. Like, does what he said, is it backed up by the game that you've played so far?
Yeah, from what I played, right, like when I think of collectibles, right, I don't know if we're talking about it today or not, but like over on PS I Love You XOXO, we're trying to do a thing where we play a game. You've heard of it? Yeah, okay. Yeah. YouTube.com/companygames. Where we're trying to, you know, we started with Bloodborne of playing something together. We did Concrete Genie last month, and now we're going to do Ratchet and Clank 2016 this month because of PlayStation Plus. And so I was playing it last night, and, you know, that's the antithesis to this in so many ways, right? Now granted, there's a bit of Metroidvania of get a new power and go there, but it's also the thing of, all right, cool, there's the objective, I'm gonna 180 and go the other way and see what's over here. And sometimes there's something, and sometimes there's just a plant I smash for a couple bolts, and that's fine. I like to hear that, like, this feels like a curated TLC game, where it is like everywhere I go there's a level of detail put into what you're doing. It's not just something that's thrown down to be an environment. Like, they're doing, not in the way you would think of Last of Us environmental storytelling, right? They're doing environmental storytelling of, you know, when we got introduced to the vacuum level and you're running through and all these vacuum hoses are there and you're having to deal with that stuff, that made sense. When we were out in the work shed, or the tool shed workshop, and, you know, we're going, building up to fighting the toolbox, right? It made sense, and like you narratively knew where you were in that house or that property. And the same thing when you got into the tree, like as we were making our way before we got into the confrontation with the squirrels, it made sense, and you, like, you know what I mean, what was going on.
You guys have any more questions for It Takes
No
Two?
No more questions, Tim. Thank you so much. No?
If you're an audio person and you weren't watching the footage we put up and you haven't seen anything about it, I think it's just something to call out that they split the screen down the vertical. So it's a vertical split screen game.
No way to change that.
Not to my knowledge. Yeah,
I'd like to add one more question. That was the one more question.
That's why he's the best in the biz. That's why he's the best in the biz.
I guess this is a hard question to ask when you're just playing a demo. But $40, it seems like on the upper end of this kind of game. Do you think it's like probably going to be worth it? Or
great question. Obviously, I think, you know, $40 is worth what you think $40 is worth. From what I played, I'd be ready to punch that ticket, but I also imagine that I'm going to platinum it like I did Way Out. So I would imagine I'm going to get two playthroughs out of this, which would probably be once through with Jen, and then if she doesn't really love it, right, playing with somebody else, like hit up Poe or something. Because there is also the I'm not wrong about this, right? Has anybody looked into this? This is one of the games with the pass, right, that you can like share
the trailer
for free.
The trailer ended with an asterisk and said,
friends play for free.
I think it's an asterisk because I think it's like a one-time thing, so I think I would share that with Poe and play the opposite way or something like that.
Interesting. Yeah, to answer your question earlier, it looks like a Way Out is about 6 to 8 hours, and that was $30.
Yeah. So, and I don't think that is lost on Hazelight, or more importantly EA, in terms of what actually it would cost. So I would be interested to see if they think this is a bigger game than a Way Out, and if that's what it is. I haven't seen previews, and I know, like, I haven't seen any previews attack it head on yet in terms of the length of that, and I don't think it was brought up in the Q&A section of the demo. But
this
it was all done,
like,
you know,
the dumbest thing in the world. I did not realize EA was publishing until you said that. I just assumed, for literally no reason besides the title, that this is published by Take-Two.
I love that.
Whenever, you know, one of the things I like, obviously, about Joseph Ferris is, again, like I say, he's very vocal and doesn't hide his excitement. He also never in any interview, whether it was our demo or when he's on the stage during EA Play, right, does he pull back on, I know a lot of people hate EA. They've been good to me. I don't know what to tell you. And it's always like, all right, that's cool. So it doesn't seem like they've gotten in the way of it.
Really funny.
Oh, sorry. The asterisk at the end of the trailer says, online co-op requires internet connection, EA account, and one online friend with It Takes Two on the same platform and or next gen platform or Friends Pass. So
when I made the thumbnail, I put in the subtitle, will Joseph Ferris owe us $1,000? And Barrett had no idea. Barrett had no idea what that was about.
Because I was like, what is this joke that I like went over my head?
It's definitely not a joke, because on that day of Games Daily, the one that I was on 2 weeks ago, they mentioned that Joseph Ferris said, if you don't like this game, I will give you $1,000. But you you have to be... No, but the funniest thing was, he goes, no, but you have to be honest. You can't lie to me and like pretend you didn't like it. You have to legitimately not like the game.
I fucking love this guy.
He's awesome. One of the most fun interviews I've ever had, honestly. Because he'll just like... He will talk about whatever. He has no filter. And you can see the PR person next to him just like cringing to death. But like, he's happy to just burst through whatever.
It's so fun. I just love the qualifier. No, you can't lie to me, though, okay? You got to really not like it.
Andy, I don't want you to lie to me here. What did you think about Outriders?
It's disappointing me. I've been a little bit disappointed with it. I went to a preview event over a year ago in January in L.A. That was, like, the last thing I did. And I played with Andrea and Alana, and it opened my eyes. I said, wow, I didn't know what this game was going to be. But Greg said, oh, you like shooter games, right? You go check this out. It's a new Square game. Square Enix, People Can Fly. And I had an absolute blast. And I think a lot of it was maybe the fact that we were all land in. Everything performed super smooth. The part that we played was really damn good and fun. And then during quarantine, I made Bless play the second demo with me, or the second sort of event. Over the internet, it was Parsec. We used Parsec to sort of, you know, play remotely. And it was so much fun, even though it was through Parsec and we were playing a cloud-based game pretty much at that point. Like, there was a noticeable performance issue. It didn't look great because we were streaming it, essentially. And I still had a lot of fun. And I could not wait for this demo to come out last week. And I feel like I have a really good processor in my PC. I have an RTX 3080, and I'm having a decent time with it offline. But when I teamed up with Greg and Bless, I was really underwhelmed by how it performed. It just felt stuttery. It felt like we were chugging along in some moments. I don't know. I'm really disappointed by the overall performance of it. And the one thing I kept telling people, I kept saying, look, I am excited to play this game for the weapons and the upgrades and the power-ups and the gunplay and going into cover. It all feels great. Like, that shit feels damn good to play online or to play on mouse and keyboard. But the acting and the cutscenes, don't expect anything from, because from what I played, they weren't great. And sure enough, they somehow have gotten worse throughout throughout this sort of demo. And for, I don't know, there's just something in the way that they are kind of framing this game. It's supposed to be super serious, and there's a moment where some guy comes to save you and he gets shot, and then you're like, what? And the person who shot that person gets shot, and you're like, huh, what a world. Or it's like, you say some line like that, and it's like, it's the fucking goofiest dumb shit ever, and it's just not, it's not great. Like, none of the cutscenes have been great. And even Greg was laughing a lot when we were playing on stream the other day. Greg Miller from Kind of Funny.
Well, that's my question for you, is that, do you feel it's supposed to be super serious? And I'm skewed because we played on stream, so it was like, let's just skip this and get into it. But I played a little bit over the weekend on my own again, and it was, you know, being reunited with, spoilers for the story that this is, you know, less than an hour in or whatever, of like, you know, there's a time jump where you get frozen in time. Everybody else ages. And like, there was one room where I walked into the room and kind of like did blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh my God. Kind of. And I was like, it didn't strike me as this was trying to be serious as much as it was trying to be an action movie.
I don't know if they're, it's different when you are like trying to go for the cheese. But I don't know. I think they're trying to go for it because they think it feels cool. I think they think these moments are badass. And they're just falling flat. The writing is really atrocious, like in a lot of this game. And what's been going viral on Twitter is this one cutscene where you jump over a ravine.
Yeah, Barrett, I sent you a video. If you could bring that up, please, in assets.
Yeah, this has been going viral on Twitter, and I experienced that moment last night when I was just playing offline or off stream, and you got to assume it's just to possibly load, but there are a lot of moments where a little cutscene. What's going on?
Go ahead, finish your statement. Sorry.
Oh no, that's it.
No, there's a lot of moments where there's a little cutscene.
Yeah, a lot of moments where there's a little cutscene that just kind of interrupt the gameplay to fake load or whatever.
Yeah, you don't have to assume. Today on Kind of Funny Games Daily, we covered the one and only Wesley Yin Poole over at Eurogamer, who talked to people who can fly about this very situation, because it's, I don't know if it's the one you're going to share, but Wesley was the first tweet of like, all right, Outriders, I don't know if I needed a cutscene for this of fade to the gameplay, fade up from black, hop over the thing, fade to black gameplay.
Yeah,
and I guess I found it interesting and fascinating as somebody who doesn't make games or whatever. I'm with you, right? I think when we were playing and something similar happened, like, oh, well, they're just hiding the load, right? They're hiding the new area. And what they brought up was, well, yeah, we're loading stuff in, but it's more because of playtesting, where since this is a multiplayer game, if you were fucking around on the other side of the thing, if you just magically warped to there, like Tim and me when we were playing Combat Evolved, then I would warp
just
to Tim.
Just letting you guys
know,
my computer's totally about to crash. I feel it coming.
Bye, Tim.
So
when I would warp over to him and be completely discombobulated, that was happening to people in the playtesting. So their solution was to put in this thing, which now that it's out into public, everybody's like, what the fuck is this? And it's like, maybe they were kind of talking like, maybe this wasn't the right solution, but this is where we went. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, the fact that it still happens when you're playing solo is not great. I'm sure it's, it makes sense.
Well, because
you're
opening a door or progressing the thing. Like, it's built in.
Here's the thing. Like, I feel like it has a really good hook. I love the looting. I love the shooting, right? I mean, that's all you got to sort of, boil this game down to. I think the enemies are interesting enough. They have smart sort of flanking patterns from what I've experienced. And it just feels good to play. But then playing with Greg and Bless, it's like, why is it running this way? It shouldn't be running this poorly. I shouldn't be running at 40-something frames, 50 frames, when I have a rig like this, So I'm fairly disappointed, and I'm hoping that they iron a lot of these issues by the time the game officially launches. Because, again, this is a demo, and I'm hoping that they are noticing all the issues that people are having. Here's the thing that I guess why I'm so disappointed with it is they have such a good online presence. They have – their Twitter account is very transparent. They put out this 21-tweet thread of what to expect from the demo. And the way they've been acting, them being like, look, this is a demo. You can carry over all your progress. It's all cross progression, super cross play, all over the board. It sort of gave me this sense of that they had this sense of confidence, right? Like, this game's gonna come out and be amazing.
The shit.
So like, we're here with you doing this, and I guess I got just really excited based on that fact, and it's been a little underwhelming for me so far.
Looking fly. Like, I really, really loved Bulletstorm, and Gears of Judgment wasn't great, but, like, I don't know, nothing about Outriders has seemed that interesting to me from the, side looking in. And I wish it was just, like, you were talking about, like, the cheesy cutscenes, I wish it just leaned into Bulletstorm more. I wish it was just full-on, like, satirical, we're stupid and we accept that kind of storytelling and world and all that.
That's the thing about it from the, again, the one stream I did, which was the main gameplay where we played for like, 2 hours or maybe a little more, maybe a little bit less. I like the gameplay of it, right? Like, I like I'm playing on PlayStation 5. I didn't feel the performance was hindered like you're talking about for PC. I enjoy the gameplay. I enjoy the cover. I enjoy the powers. I enjoy the effects for it. I like that. I want to see more of that. And what I found interesting, and I was talking about this the other day with somebody, it's... Since we played it on stream and I skipped a bunch of stuff, now that, and like you're going through and I'm like, I get it, of like, oh, time's passed, oh, I'm older, oh, this is what's that. I want to go back, and I think I might just wait for retail at this point and just say, whatever the progress I've made from the demo and start from scratch and play offline by myself for a little bit to get really grounded in the world. Because I do think the story's interesting. I'm right there with you that the acting doesn't seem great and it does seem like there's weird dialogue or weird interactions or whatever. But if I can't get hooked by that, I'm not in this for the long haul, and that sucks. Mike hit me up about playing it again on stream this Wednesday because he hasn't done anything, and I was like, yeah, let's do it. But it is that thing of like, I need to get grounded. I need to find my anchor point in it to want to keep going and want to keep grinding, not to loot for it.
Power-ups are so much fun, having the four different classes and having the classes have a shit ton of abilities that you can then kind of make your loadout, right? You have three abilities that you can set and you can unlock up to eight of them. So essentially you can kind of mix and match what sort of abilities you want to be running. And I've been having a blast with, I guess, like the main part of the gameplay is a lot of fun to me, but I've just been disappointed by a lot of the other issues, and it's a bummer to me. And I hate being this negative, but like I truly think that the two of the least good voice actors are the main actors, are the main characters that you play. Because I played the male character when I did both demos. I was like, ooh, this is kind of rough. I'll roll with the female character on this one, and it was still equally not as great, and that bummed me out.
Sure.
Imran, you've been playing Valheim. Tell me all about that.
I have been playing Valheim. This is the, I'm guessing, I feel like it's one of the most popular games out on the internet right now. Like, it is in the Steam top 10 of all time, after only being like, really, I've only known about it for like a couple of weeks. So I don't know how much earlier it predates it, but like I bought a copy because I was preparing for an interview with the developers. I started playing it and I really couldn't stop playing it. It is like you guys know of Rust, you know of the survival sim, stuff like that. Imagine if Rust was like perceptible. Like if you could actually play that game and understand what you're doing, that's Valheim. Like it is a survival game mixed kind of with like a Dark Souls, Breath of the Wild, Monster Hunter kind of thing. You are put on the space between life and Valhalla, and you were told you have another chance to come back to life, but you've got to defeat these like 10 monster enemies, whatever, to get there. And you can go up to their areas, their tombstones or whatever, and summon them whenever you want. But if you do that when you're unprepared, then you might as well just be like wasting everything you've done so far. So the game puts you on the island, says, okay, well, here's how you build a weapon. Here's how you build an axe. Here's like what you can do for a workbench. It says, well, you probably need a house. Like you need somewhere to live, to house this stuff and to make bigger things. So that's basically the tutorial, is find somewhere to live. And I found like a bunch of my friends built a house, which seems insane because you could just find a house. And I found one, patched up the walls, like set a fire. And this is a terrible idea, because one thing the game doesn't tell you, and this is kind of where the Breath of the Wild stuff comes in, is there's a bunch of systems that interact. If you you're not conscious of these systems, you will get yourself killed. So I used the torch. I just kind of held there because it's cold outside. I was warm in the house. And it says, like, you're warm, like, you're not exposed. What it doesn't tell you is if I close the door and didn't put in a window, I smoke myself to death.
I was going to say, you're going to get carbon monoxide?
No, I did. That happened. I had a corpse run back to my house for my stuff. So I did that. And then I went to a different house that when I died, I dropped the torch and the torch burned the building down. So I found a different house. I went to rest there. I did not do a good job exploring that house. There was a giant hornet's nest in there. Trying to destroy the hornet's nest did not work out great for me. So I died again. But eventually I got to a point where I felt like I was strong enough to actually like summon the monster. Finally check this things out. So I summoned it. Nothing happened. Like, what's the deal? And I started hearing these noises from like across the map. Like, I don't know what that is, but it doesn't sound good. It's like coming near, or by the time I get there, it would have been close to dark. So I just kind of like sprint over there. And it's the Oblivion style thing of the more you jump or run or whatever, you gain experience. So I try to run over there with like my current experience level, which wasn't great. And I see the monster just destroying my shit. And I have no idea what to do. So I started like attacking him, and he just like backhands me and starts destroying my house more. So like, that's the thing of, yeah, you can summon the monster and you can try, but if you mess up, if you don't do it right, if you're not ready to fight him, he is just going to destroy everything you own and you have to start fresh, which can take a while.
They don't obey you.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So I tried to play with some other people, and like you can make, you don't share a defogged of war map, but you do share an area. So you can make like houses together. You can like morph the terrain. The game is not quite built for stuff like that yet, but you can still like move, like work around it. And it's this really I'm not much for survival games, and even like looking at this thing, if I hadn't had an interview with the developers, I wouldn't have ever probably played it. But it's still neat, and it's neat, and it's broken in really fun and interesting ways. Like, there's a glitch where if you are on a boat and a bird lands on the boat, the game's logic then dictates the bird controls the boat now. So if the bird starts,
I'm the captain now.
If the bird just starts flying away, the boat will go with it. So you can just like, you're on a flying boat being led by a pigeon. And it's like, it's that perfect level of like not quite broken, but not quite like,
that's Norse mythology right there, Iman.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is good Norse mythology. I was asking the developers, like, why is every game about Norse mythology now? They're like, oh yeah, that HBO show from like 8 years ago. That's why. Because like, that's why they made it, was they like that show. So, and it's a neat little fun thing. And like, the graphics have these really interesting effects, but overall it looks like a cleaned up PS1 game, which I think actually works pretty well for it.
I love the style.
Yeah, I'm digging it quite a bit. Have you been playing it, Andy?
I played a tiny bit of it with Alana and some friends from Funhouse. We hopped in. I had no idea what I was doing. And luckily, our buddy Jacob Fullerton knows the ins and outs and had already built several houses, and some of them really nice houses, like gigantic sort of structures. And for the little that I played, I definitely wanted to go back and just didn't really find the time to go back to it. I think just other games, this is like around the time that I was about to finish up Dark Souls, and I was playing a lot of other things, but I had a lot of fun with it. The art style, yeah, the art style texture-wise is super low poly, lo-fi, but it still feels really modern because of the lighting. There's a lot of really good lighting and fog effects when you're out in the distance. Yeah. I had a blast with what I did play, like just crafting stuff and venturing out too far and people being like, oh, Andy, that's like, we got to be careful over there. There's like stuff that can attack you. And sure enough, all these kind of trolls start running after me. I didn't know it was going to be that type of game, Imran. I didn't know we'd be fighting
all these trolls.
I didn't know there'd be bosses. I think that's the most intriguing thing about it is I'm used to, I don't know, any sort of survival game, like mostly Rust, where you're just kind of surviving, and sure, you can fight some NPCs in different areas, but I didn't know that there would be these gigantic sort of forest creatures that are these gods that you're talking about, the ones that you summon. Every clips that I've seen of them look really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just looked it up. The graphic style is awesome.
Yeah, it has the PS1, like literally PS1, that's how they describe it, character models. And then like you have like a bunch of beard choices and stuff like that. It was like, it's a neat look for this game. So I will tell one more death story and then we can move on. When I first got the axe, I started chopping down a tree. I was like, all right, yeah, I'll chop down a tree, get some wood, all that. Tree falls on me. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's probably my fault. So next time I come back, I do the crow's run, grab my axe, start chopping another tree right next to it. I figure this time I will stand to the side so the tree will not fall on me. Tree falls in front of me, then starts rolling downhill and kills me. I was like, okay. Now very important lessons. Do not stand in front of the tree. Stand uphill from the tree. All the like important things to learn.
That's awesome. Greg, before we move on to the topic of the show, tell me about Kill It With Fire.
Kill It With Fire is a game I first heard about a little bit from one Andy Cortez a long, long time ago. But we were doing PS I Love You yesterday, and it came up that it was coming out this week. And I was like, oh, that's the one from Andy, right? And we watched the trailer. And what it had grabbed us was, it's, you know, again, we bullshit around obviously a lot and act like a bunch of clowns on the show, and we're not as sincere sometimes as we should be. But again, like, I mean it when I say, like, we're building this with you, the audience, not for you, right? We're building this with you. And somebody had written in to PS I Love You and was like, hey, I know you don't usually do it, but if you're when you're going through games that are coming out this week, you should read the description for Kill It With Fire. And so Blessing threw up the trailer that is on right now, but the description is, the spider, mankind's most ancient and deadly nemesis. As a licensed Kill It With Fire exterminator, it's time to fight back. Assemble your arsenal of increasingly excessive weapons, track spiders across suburbia, and burn everything in your path. Awesome. And we watched the show like, holy shit, this looks hilarious. And so, yeah, we got codes for it, and I popped it in and played an hour here before Gamescast. And it's totally, when I watch the trailer, if you're not watching the trailer, it's first person, you're running around, you're, you know, using a shotgun or, you know, a spray can with a lighter on it to set fire to everything. All sorts of gadgets and weapons that kill the little spiders that are running around. And when I looked at it, I was like, oh, is this a VR game? And it's not, but it totally reminds me of the PlayStation VR games and I guess Oculus games as well. But, you know, Vacation Simulator, Job Simulator, it's got that kind of vibe to it. And
very low poly.
Exactly, right? You running through these different things and, you know, you start in an apartment and you see a spider and it's like, I think it's like, it begins like your war with the nemesis or whatever. And it's, you know, you trash your entire house, killing all these different spiders, running through a checklist on a clipboard of things to do to get, you know, past this and get to the next area or whatever to clear it. It's one of those fun little physics games, right? Where, you know, everything's destructible. Everything can interact with each other. How's it going to go? What's it going to happen to it? And I enjoyed myself with it. I don't think I'll go back to it. I don't blame the developer for this. I blame PlayStation. I'm like playing it. I'm like, oh man, what are the trophies like? Pop out, no platinum, 21 bronzes. What the fuck? Who at PlayStation was like, who does this to independent developers where they give them, hey, here you go. Here's what you need to do. Put some, and like, they don't know they need to put a platinum in it. They don't know if they just ask for a platinum, they'll get a platinum. So instead, we get 21 bronzes for this thing.
I can call Casey right now. Don't worry about it.
It's too late. The ship sailed. Somebody needs to tell him for the future reference, you know. Put a real trophy list in this
we
game.
Care about these trophies, yeah.
Add one more level. If there was a platinum, would you get it in this
game? No, probably not. This is a fun game. It's, with even Job Simulator, stuff like that, right? I didn't go back for the platinum on it. But it's quirky and it's different and it's cool and it's smashing a spider and it's, you know, going through and seeing the place burn down, smashing picture frames. Like,
How far did you get?
I did the first, I'm into the third biome, maybe the fourth.
Okay.
Why? What's happening?
Yeah, I got fairly far. I played it because, again, full disclosure, my buddy Casey makes this game. I used to work with him at Rooster Teeth Games. And when everybody there got laid off, he said, I have some ideas. I want to go make some games on my own. And so he decided to make Kill to Fire. He sent me a build like close to 3 years ago. And was like, check this out. Just download it on Steam. It's what I've been working on. And I was like, whoa, this is actually a cool concept. And now that the game's fully released, I'm super happy for him. Tiny Build picked it up, and it scared the shit out of me. Like there's a bunch of different colored spiders, and they all do different things. They're like different.
Yeah, there's a red one that'll run around. You smash that one, it'll birth out a bunch of white babies that you then have to kill.
No,
and then there's an orange one that fucking jumps.
Yeah, I got.
And there's a moment.
I got to that level, that where they introduced the jumping spider. That's where I
there's a moment that I don't know if I had even had the clip saved anymore because I had to purge all my clips on Twitch. Mm. But that I was like, I think that's a red one. Yeah, I'm standing on top of a car, super scared. I'm like, I think that's a red spider. And this motherfucker flies at me. And I just went, oh, it's a jumping one! Like, I yelled so loudly. And yeah, the ones that jump at you, there are ones that get deadlier and like freakier towards the end of the game. But the orange ones that you encounter mid-game, I think are the scariest ones. They just scared the absolute shit out of me. But there is definitely a completionist. I wish they had trophies because there's definitely the completionist sort of mentality going into this game where you have the checklist and you see you can move on, but there's a lot of other stuff you can still do.
And there's boomboxes with challenges. There's boomboxes with challenges. Like, you know, first level, I unlocked the boombox by doing all the check marks, but then it was like, you know, use the revolver and kill. And I was like, oh, I don't even have the revolver yet because, you know, you save your progress and you unlock different things. You know, you have like, you know, for me, a PKE meter, probably for other people more like in Aliens where they had like, you know, the radar to go find them. You have that for the spiders. So there is that thing of like walking up the kitchen table and being like, it says there's two in this pizza box. You throw them in the pizza box and then two rush out and you're trying to slam them with a clipboard or whatever the hell it is.
Opening up the fridge, just be like, oh, just closing it again. Like, oh, it's really terrifying. But I had a blast throwing the throwing stars, the shurikens at him was a blast.
Yeah. See that in my like, I'm probably not going to go back to it. Isn't because I think the game isn't quality. I just think it's like, oh, I get it. And it's just not what I want to play, but I could totally see if any of this sounds fun or you were really into Job Simulator or anything like that, or the, you know, the normal physics games we're talking about, I could totally see getting into it. It's funny. It's got a bunch of different things to break and fool around with and see how they interact.
It's definitely a really good streaming game for people wanting to make content. Like you will yell and freak out on stream. It's a blast. And there's also, I believe Casey was, I'm not sure. I think he was thinking about adding an arachnophobia sort of
somebody had said that, yeah,
meter like they had in the Grounded. Xbox. Grounded.
Yeah, I feel like Blessing brought that up, that there's an arachnophobia like setting now.
Yeah, because he was tweeting out live, "Hey, I hadn't really thought about doing this. Should I add this?" And a lot of people were like, "Yeah, of course." So I think he added a mode where there's just little tiny dots. They're just like spheres that kind of just move around, and some of them move faster or whatever.
So in my apartment today, I saw a spider crawling up my leg. Now, I have no problem with spiders. They eat other bugs. But when the unspoken rule is, once you start climbing on me, you have to leave the apartment.
Sure.
So I got a tissue. I like very carefully like grabbed the spider. Like
That's why Imran kicked me out the other day.
I put the spider in the tissue, made sure not to crush it or anything, so I could take it outside. So I do that, open the door, stand outside the door, unfurl the tissue, nothing in there.
Oh no.
So now there is somewhere in my apartment a pissed off spider that knows I tried to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Jesus. I'm so sorry for you and your loss.
Time, you know,
behind enemy lines.
It's gonna make its move,
At least we're out in Australia.
I thought this guy was cool. He was like fine with me before. What's up?
Just don't break the rule. Just don't break the one
don't
rule.
Don't break the fucking rule, spiders.
You knew this. We had a contract, a social contract.
I want to talk about video game anniversaries, but before we do that, let me tell you about our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Freshly. Dinner time can be chaotic, but with Freshly, it's easy. Their chefs take care of your meals a few nights a week and take the pressure all off of you. Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered fresh to your door. No cooking required. That's the difference with this one, is Freshly allows you to literally just heat the things up and then boom, you're eating and it's fantastic. Blessing's been loving it. Cool Greg's been loving it. Cool Greg's been living off of it. Grocery shopping and cooking can be a pain, especially right now. And with Freshly, you don't have to. Your meals arrive cooked and fresh every week, so you can keep your fridge stocked and skip the trip to the store. Snowmike Mike himself has been ranting and raving about this. Ordering is easy. You just visit Freshly.com and choose from over 30 delicious, satisfying, better for you meals like steak, peppercorn, sausage baked penne, which I had recently. And it was fantastic. Or their chicken pesto bowl. Right now, Freshly is offering you guys $40 off your first two orders when you go to freshly.com/kinda. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to freshly.com/kinda for $40 off your first two orders. That's freshly.com/kinda to get $40 off your first two orders. All right, guys. This year, it's the anniversary of many video games, and that's kind of the way that this works, as video games have only been around for, 30, 40 years at this point. So it kind of comes in cycles where anytime there's an anniversary for one, there's an anniversary for a whole bunch, because a lot happened in 1985 Exactly. But I want to talk to you guys about how video game anniversaries have been handled and how we wish they will be handled in the future, specifically with the jump off points of Pokemon currently having its 25th anniversary and Zelda currently having its 35th anniversary, hot off the heels of Mario having its 35th anniversary last year. Imran, how do you feel those have been handled so far?
The Mario one is like, there's two separate discussions around that thing. Like, as a Mario anniversary of things we are doing with Mario this year, sure, it would have been nice if there was a new game, but 3D All-Stars, Mario 35, Mario 3D World, like, those are pretty good products. Like, the Game & Watch thing, they're pretty good products. It's a good celebration of, like, an anniversary that I don't think most people really care about, which is the 35th anniversary. But, like, that's fine. The stuff they did around it of, the time-limited stuff, that's bullshit. That's, like, legitimately a term that gets thrown around too much, but is actually showing this point anti-consumer. But I think in terms of the products they released for Mario was unexciting but appropriate.
What do you think that they're going to keep doing that type of release thing? Because they've done it now with the Fire Emblem game as well.
Yeah. I hope no, but it did really fucking well for Mario. Like, that game sold... it sold more copies in a short time frame than I expect it would have. It probably would have sold more over a longer period if it had no cutoff release date. But since it sold so much in a very short, they got their returns on that game fast, then I would not be shocked if at some point, like with the Zelda or Metroid or something, they do that thing again.
So let's start there. Andy, what do you expect we're going to get from Zelda's 35th anniversary that we haven't gotten yet?
Well, I thought we would get some sort of announcements the last
fucking
direct.
Defeat in his voice as this conversation starts.
Yeah, I thought there would be some sort of hint or lead up to it, and everything since then, I'm tempering my expectations, and I know some people have said, look, the anniversary, this whole anniversary stuff, there's going to be more and more news as the year goes. I mean, pie in the sky stuff, I want a full remake of something. I don't want just more remasters. Another Link's Awakening type remake thing. Do it for Link to the Past. Ooh. Do it for the Oracle games. That's the goal right there. But I think it is going to be more remasters that will each sell for $60. And we're all going to fucking eat that shit up.
Well, I mean, at this point, we got to get Wind Waker and Twilight Princess, like, just to have the Switch finally be able to move on.
They're like two of like a handful of Wii U, quote unquote, titles that like haven't been ported to the Switch at this
that
point.
That people like.
And also for the Zelda 35th anniversary, it would have been nice to just acknowledge, just happy birthday, Zelda, on the day that it was the third. Like, that would have been cool. But we didn't get anything. Like, okay, like, people like really up in arms about Skyward Sword. Like, Skyward Sword has been rumored for years. Like, yeah, I know they probably didn't handle it the best. Whatever. Just like fucking acknowledge the Zelda 35th anniversary on the day. And they were completely silent about it. And it's so weird.
I wrote an article like getting a bunch of quotes from like game industry people about Zelda for the 35th anniversary. Phil Spencer has said more about Zelda for his 35th anniversary than Nintendo has.
And that's why like I'm not confident that like I would love if we get Wind Waker on the Switch. I would love if we got Twilight Princess on the Switch. I'm almost scared that we're not going to get much more, because I feel like the reason they are being so quiet is because they're like, if we bring it up, we're going to get more shit about it and we have nothing to say because we're not planning on anything else. Like, oh, God.
So hypothetically, if those games are coming, hypothetically, I would imagine they're not going to say anything before Skyward Sword comes out, because those games, I would guess, would be double pack. Like, because you can't sell two. I mean, I guess you could. They could do whatever they want. If they are a double pack, then selling them before Skyward Sword is going to make Skyward Sword look much, much worse. And that's already a tough value proposition right now.
Yeah.
I think it really is the person that forgot to get their significant other a gift. That, like, if we don't really acknowledge it, like, I forgot to get him the gift. You know, like, I don't know. It's just, I am not confident at all with what Nintendo does anymore. Just not at all.
No, yeah, and like the Mario anniversary, we didn't know about till September last year. Yeah. Even though it was his anniversary for the entire year, like at some point, they're just like, okay, now we'll talk about it.
Yeah, and granted, the COVID and all that stuff, we know. But I do think Nintendo tends to not celebrate the day as much as the year or whatever random parameters they put around it. Some fun things I did want to read here is about Luigi's 30th anniversary, lest we forget. I want to explain that Luigi appeared in Mario Brothers when it was first released on July 14th, 1983. Since it had been 30 years since Luigi's first appearance, it was decided that 2013 would be the year of Luigi.
Yeah.
So that's great. On March 19, 2013, Nintendo began the Year of Luigi. This included a year of Luigi-themed games like Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, Dr. Luigi, Mario & Luigi's Dream Team, and new Super Luigi U. And Luigi's Mansion statue was released on Club Nintendo, blah, blah, blah. On March 19, 2014, the Year of Luigi ended.
A dark day in Nintendo history. The day that Luigi ended.
The Year of Luigi ended.
I also want to point out that 2013 was Nintendo's worst financial year in the last two decades.
Which is my favorite fact that you've ever brought to my attention. but there's also something that I learned today, is that on October 4th, 2019, Nintendo declared that the entire month of October would be the month of Luigi. This was done to celebrate Luigi's Mansion 3.
Is that a demotion, or are they just giving him more than he deserves? Like, I don't know which direction that's going.
My favorite
they might as well wish him like Happy Mother's Day, like, because none of this shit's making any sense.
No,
like,
this was done to celebrate Luigi's Mansion 3, which was released on October 31st, 2019. The month of Luigi ended on November 1st, 2019.
Sad day. Sad day. Dark day for Nintendo when the month of Luigi ended.
But
happy,
then, so
happy you, Hanukkah, Luigi.
You look at that. Obviously, 2013 was a very different time with Nintendo in terms of even just like what hardware was out. But
yeah,
looking at last year with COVID and all that stuff, with what they did for Mario, I think that the thing that I was most upset with was the how piss poor 3D All-Stars was, in the sense of Mario 64 not even being widescreen when Sunshine was, and not including Galaxy 2, and just the timing of everything. Yeah. But besides that, like, they did a lot when it comes to the, you know, Mario 35 and having all the different merch stuff, the Mario Lego stuff. Like, I'm sure they would have loved to have timed the Universal Studios Nintendo stuff a little bit better with that, had it all worked out. But
the Splatoon shirts I tried to buy, Jesus Christ, could not have. Stupid cart would never add, and the website was just a disaster. I'm so mad about that.
Yeah.
But all the in-game things of like Animal Crossing and, you know, all the different in-game events across there, the library and stuff, it's like, all right, cool, you guys did fine, and maybe not that exciting in terms of new stuff, but with Zelda, I'm it's interesting looking at Zelda and Pokemon, which are both having their anniversaries, and both were talked about within a week of each other, because it's like Pokemon actually did its Pokemon Presents and made at least some announcements that I think overall are interesting and exciting to a lot of people. I'm sure that many are very trepidatious of this for obvious reasons, but it's like, cool, at least we know we're getting some new Pokemon products this year, and some things that people have wanted a long time with the remakes of Diamond and Pearl. But it got me thinking a lot about how when Mario's 20th anniversary, I think it was, happened, and all they did was take ports, or not ports, like ROMs of Mario All-Stars and just put it on the Wii.
Yeah. That sold actually like super well. I think it was one of the best-selling Wii games for a long time.
Shocker.
It's crazy, you know? And it's like, I'm looking at that, and, you know, I think it's crazy that they would take that game and sell it for as much as they did, but they did, and it worked. But when are we going to get that for Pokemon, for the older Pokemon games? Because that, to me, sounds like something that I would love to have, and I understand they're not going to want to do it because of remakes and this, that, and the other, but at this point, I'd even love to have the remakes on Switch. Like, even if it was just a straight-up ROM port of Soul Silver and Heart Gold and all that stuff.
It's weird. I'm thinking about just a lot of Game Boy ports. Yeah, I hadn't even considered that, Tim.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is like the Pokemon company is weird about ports. Like, unless you can, at the moment, take those Pokemon and move them into like Pokemon Bank, they don't care to do it. Like, when they did the Virtual Console releases on 3DS, then that's one of the things they did for that, was they made it so you can move those into the current generation somehow. So I imagine it's some combination of that's more work to do than you would think, and also they don't want to step over the remakes, because right now, like, why would you buy, like, if they put a Virtual Console style thing on Switch of Diamond and Pearl, then the very graphically faithful Diamond and Pearl remake might lose quite a bit of value in that sense.
Yeah, but I mean, like, what if they like timed it out and like kind of really had a year of Pokemon and started with the Game Boy games that they've already done.
Red and Blue, yeah.
You know, like, they already made Red and Blue work with the Pokemon Bank, and they already made Gold and Silver and or Crystal. I don't remember which one it was. It might have just been Crystal on the 3DS.
But they also need to understand that there's a lot of people that don't give a shit about Pokemon Bank. Like me, like, there's
please think of Andy.
Yeah, like, I think that they operate with Pokemon thinking that everybody is tied to every system possible that they have, because they want you to be able to make sure that you're leveling that little fucker up when you're brushing your teeth or whatever. I don't know, but it's like, some just want to play a Pokemon game. Like, I don't necessarily need to have everything tied in and worry about carrying Pokemon over.
I feel you, but I think that while you're right that not everybody wants that, so many Pokemon fans, and we're talking about, like, if they were to do something for the anniversary, to me, not having Pokemon Bank for whatever they're releasing is more similar to not having Galaxy 2 in the 3D All-Stars pack, where it's like, No, that's a feature that's necessary, because, like, the whole thing is catching them all. So being able to, any Pokemon you catch, being able to be yours in the different games, I think is much more important than Pokemon Sleep, which at the very most is an additive experience.
I think, like, what Pokemon means is just so all over the place now. It could be, they take advantage of the fact that it can be anything. So, like, even when we talk about, like, mainline Pokemon games, there are, like, Sword and Shield. There is the now top-down Diamond Pearl remake. There is Let's Go as a remake-style thing. There is the like Pokemon Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire as a remake-style thing, which took like the same kind of stuff from Pokemon XY. There is now Pokemon Legends, which is an entirely different thing from all that. And all these are considered mainline games. So like at some point, they're just too much main Pokemon. And like maybe they're thinking, okay, we don't need to throw like the actual old stuff onto this pile as well.
What do about the people like me, Imran, that don't care about overachieving, right? I don't want to catch them all.
Did I get it?
I just want to catch some of them.
Yeah, I just want to catch a couple.
What, what is the breakdown of people who play Pokemon? And I know this is such, there's no number, I assume, on this, even if there is, Imran will know. But like, is it, if you, it, the majority must just play and never fucking catch them all, right?
Majority, I assume so, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, there's no trophy data or anything to like tell
sure,
us.
Sure, exactly.
I imagine most kids
appealing
just like
to the 1%. These guys.
Think of it, Andy.
But it's not even just catching them all. It's even just being able to play like with the Pokemon you like in different generations and stuff. You know, like they know what the hell they're doing, and that's what all the controversy was about with Sword and Shield was.
Yeah.
That like not only were their Pokemon not there, you couldn't even put them in if you wanted to.
Yeah.
For many hundreds of your old
I remember
favorites.
that whole controversy. I just didn't fully understand, so I was like, right on, guys, you guys are right to be mad. Like, I didn't fucking know any of it, man.
I stand with the majority, whatever you guys think, I'm on your side.
I really love the idea of Andy as like Ash Ketchum's rival, as like a kind of lazy Pokemon trainer. That's just like, I don't know, I don't really care about catching them all.
He's the villain.
I'm gonna defeat you today.
Shit. Like, ah, shit, man. I'm actually like, running late, I can't be there.
I also love that, like, Andy's like, man, like, why don't they think about me? But then also he's like, all right, right on, all the people who
yeah,
you know,
go get it, guys. Go get them.
Well, they're not thinking about them, trust me. They are a very, very angry bunch. Imran, do you think that with everything you just said about all the different main lines and all that, do you think that we will see another Let's Go? Or do you think that with the debut of Brilliant Pearl and whatever the fuck, Diamond and all that
shiny
shit.
Shiny Diamond.
Shine red like a diamond.
And with how those look, that those are the replacement of that style. Because that's kind of the read that I get on this. Because this is a very different look than what we would have expected from a remake.
I think then, like, Pokemon Go set up this very simple thing that, like, we really don't like to talk about. But it just makes, it really oversimplified Pokemon. And I think Pokemon Let's Go took that idea and moved it to the mainline games, saying, like, okay, you don't want to battle Pokemon to catch them? Sure, cool. We will have a game for you here. I don't think Diamond and Pearl replaced that mechanic, that aspect of it. So when I think eventually we will probably get Pokemon Let's Go Johto, and then like it gives them another avenue to start remaking games from a simpler mechanic to get the people who weren't on board with the complexities of Pokemon onto this new thing. So they basically now have like a tier list of like Pokemon that go up by level of complexity. And I think Let's Go still exists there.
Look how cute this is. I think it's cute as shit.
Yeah, this is an adorable fucking
this
game.
Is a little kid, little monitos.
Play this, yeah.
They look adorable, man. I know they look like anatomically weird, but I think it's cute as shit.
I saw like somebody like do a picture of like if they just added black lines to everything, it would look a lot better. And I think like especially the overworld sprites, if they made them a little bit more defined as cartoon characters, then it would look a lot better for me.
Yeah, I mean, just keeping it real, can't wait to play this game, but I'm very disappointed with the look of it. Like, especially 2 years after Link's Awakening looking as amazing as it did. Yeah. This just seems kind of generic as opposed to, like,
Link's Awakening was a nice 2 years.
But do you think... Yeah. But do you think... Yeah. Do you think that's a lighting thing, Tim? Because I think Link's Awakening looked phenomenal because they're going for more realism in how the world looks. Obviously, it's still proportion-wise, they're not going for realism, but the grass is a little bit shiny. The water is like very, very shiny. And then when we look at Pokemon, it's very flat. But I think that's because when we see Pokemon in games, a water Pokemon doesn't look shiny and wet or whatever. Like everything is a very flat texture. And I think that's just how Pokemon looks. Every texture you see is super flat and there's no reflective properties to anything. Is it just because visually it looks flat or is it just a little tiny little kids running around?
I mean, I think it's a lot of different factors. And at the end of the day, I don't think that it looks bad. I just don't think that it looks good or great or at the very least not exciting or interesting. Like, Link's Awakening took Zelda that, in the same way you're talking about, didn't have that look, but it gave it that look, and it kind of gave it this extra, like, yeah, it's a remake of a Game Boy game that it's tile-based, but it doesn't feel that way because it has this toy diorama look where they took everything and were like, okay, but how would this look as a toy, essentially? Yeah. With Sapphire and Diamond, it's like, am I messing that up? Diamond and Pearl. The DS look is personally my favorite look of Pokemon to this day. Like, I love the sprites in a semi-isometric 3D look. Like, that, it just has such a great aesthetic to it. So this, to me, in so many ways, I'm like, I actually think that it looks worse than the original games. And it's still a tile-based simple thing. But, again, looks fine. Not the end of the world. It's just not what I expected at all from
these
remakes. I'm extremely stoked, because this seems like everybody's favorite Pokemon game. This seems like the hardcore fans.
Oh, I hated it.
Yeah,
oh, this is my least favorite.
I think it's
one.
An age thing, Andy.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Because my Twitter timeline was just blown up with Sinnoh remakes. It, like, oh my god, we're getting. I could have sworn that these were the ones that everybody lauded. Because I was like,
you're
every
gonna
like,
catch,
months,
Andy,
like,
you're gonna catch 15
Sinnoh
of these, and you're gonna be happy.
Yeah, exactly.
You're catch 15 Pokemon, put it down, and you're gonna have a great time. Don't.
Because Gold and Silver is like my shit. That's like the story that I love the most. But with every Pokemon game, I mentioned this on the reacts of that direct. I have played every Pokemon game. I've only beaten, well, now three with Sword and Shield. Like, I beat Blue back in the day. I beat Gold, and then I beat Shield or Sword or whichever one it was. But all the other ones, I've played for about 2 or 3 hours, and then I just give up because, you know, underachieving Pokemon trainer. I don't want to catch them all, Greg. Just don't care to.
Diamond and Pearl aren't bad by any means. I just think, and at some points, they have great stuff. Like, some of the characters are fantastic.
What's the worst one?
For me, it would be XY. I think that's the worst.
I'd probably say that, too. Yeah. I'm also not a huge Gen 3 fan, either.
I mean, Gen 3 had a lot of flaws, but it was the one that I played, like, for 600 hours. Because that was the one that was out when I was, like, in high school.
And,
like,
I'm right there with you. I played the fuck out of it.
Had a GBA with a rechargeable battery, which was key to playing a game a really long time.
Yeah. But what would you want from a Pokemon anniversary, Imran? And do you think they're doing a good enough job?
I think, like, for what I want from a Pokemon anniversary in terms of game releases, I think Legends is kind of getting close to what I want of you are actually creating a Pokemon world. And that is what I think is actually exciting about that game. Like, I know everyone looks at it like, oh, this is Breath of the Wild, but, like, I don't want Breath of the Wild, because Breath of the Wild was, like, four monsters and they're everywhere and they all have interesting interactions with their systems. But what I want is, like, you see a Rhyperior on a cliff, and that Rhyperior shoots a beam at you because it sees you too. That is a Pokemon world that I think is going to be cool. I don't know that Legends is that yet, but it's getting closer to that. So for, like, a Pokemon anniversary, this is very specific to Pokemon, not any other series in the world, I would want it to, like, say, oh, we understand that we've been kind of not treading or coasting water or whatever, but, like, we understand that Pokemon has been basically the same thing for the last couple of decades.
Yeah, and forever.
Yeah, and, like, we know that even when we change it, with Let's Go, it's not really that big a change. But, it, like, if we do want to make a big change. We do want to make good on what Pokemon promised on the Game Boy 25 years ago. And that's what I think a good anniversary project would be. Granted, this game probably falls outside the anniversary, so who knows?
But yeah. I still count it, though, especially with all the COVID stuff. Like, you got to imagine that they originally planned for Diamond and Pearl to be earlier in the year, and then this, like, maybe like a March release, and this to be the big fall release. But what I'm excited about, and what I think they're actually doing a good job with, is keeping both of these in the same region. Because the reason that I enjoy Gen 2 Gold and Silver so much is that they were a direct sequel to Red and Blue, and you see characters from the other game, and 2 years have passed. Things have, like, evolved, and, you know, you kind of, like, changed and grown and, like, all that stuff. And it felt like it was adding to the same experience. And most of the other gens don't kind of share that. Of course, there's Black and White 1 and 2 together as themselves. But I like that in November or whatever, we're going to play through Sinnoh. And then in early 2021, hopefully, we're going to be able to see the same place we just played through, but 100 years ago, and how did it get there? And hopefully they kind of build some, like, legacy there, you know?
2022.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, oh, my gosh.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I forgot about that shit.
Getting off Pokemon for a sec, Andy, how does it make you feel that this year is Halo's 20th anniversary?
Oh, no, Tim, don't tell
me. And even with that, the Xbox, it's the Xbox's 20th anniversary, guys.
Oh, my gosh, you're right. I guess 02 was really the first year that I got into Xbox because I was a freshman in high school. Oh, my God. Yeah. Awful. It feels awful. I wish you didn't tell me, Tim. I wish you didn't tell me.
Do you think that with Halo Infinite coming out, that there was a chance that they could do some anniversary stuff that'd be worth a damn?
Maybe like a Halo, a Fortnite type thing. But I feel like Nintendo's really... No, I guess other games do it. Like Final Fantasy does some stuff. I feel like Nintendo's the one that really, really talks about their anniversaries in a way that a lot of other devs and publishers just don't. And it might be, hey, you know, it's the year anniversary of Death Stranding. We have a new suit that you can get. But they don't really go out there and make it this whole event that they're going to kind of, surround the brand with. I feel like Nintendo's really the only ones that truly get down like that. I can't really think of other ones.
Like Sony had this big 25th anniversary thing for the PS4, or like for PlayStation in general, but they did like the anniversary PS4s and the, you know, themes and all 20th. That. 20th. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Like, I wish they would have done more stuff with the games. Like,
yeah.
And Astrobot celebrates the PlayStation history quite well, but it would have been neat to be like, and we're going to bring Jumping Flash to like play on your PS4 or whatever. Just stuff like that. I'm just acknowledging that, oh, you guys were around in the 96 when you had to play ESPN Extreme Sports because that was on every demo disc. Like, we are going to acknowledge that you
there
exist.
There was a theme. They give you a PlayStation 4 theme, Imran. Don't worry about it.
What are you going to do when they ignore Patapon's anniversary, Greg?
Dude,
what are you gonna do then?
December, 10-year anniversary of the PlayStation Vita in Japan. Let's fucking go. What are we
doing? What are we doing?
Give me a PlayStation Vita keychain.
Something tells me you're gonna be after one to throw the anniversary party for.
God damn it, I'll do it. Fine. It's the Vita. Thanos thing. I'll do it myself.
I mean, what I want is just I want to go to Pizza Hut and get another demo disc and play Tony Hawk and play Einhander and maybe play Brave Fencer Musashi. Let's bring back that game.
I know that
Brave Fencer.
They couldn't do this for like licensing reasons, and it probably just wouldn't be worth it. But how awesome would it be if they just released a demo disc and it had like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater remake, Final Fantasy VII remake, Crash Bandicoot, Insane Trilogy, like just like that Tomb Raider thing we've been seeing.
That would be
like,
so awesome. And it's only those long. Cool. Like they're just the demos.
Yeah, it's just that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Nintendo's the only ones that we get super stoked about re-releases because everything else is just kind of backwards compatible on a lot of stuff now. Yeah. Where with Nintendo, you know, we're getting, oh, the HD re-release of when's the Wind Waker one coming? That's what, and I think a lot of that's just due to their hardware limitations. So it's like, it's kind of like, hey, we're giving you this thing, even though on the other, you know, PlayStation and Xbox, you can just play those anyway because they're available. Because no other publishers really say, oh, it's the 20th anniversary of Siphon Filter. Let's make a new Siphon Filter. Like, that just doesn't, that shit doesn't happen. You know, they're not bringing back old franchises. I don't want to be Gabe Logan.
Sega does it with the.
I don't want to be Gabe Logan.
But Sega's always been pretty good about Sonic's anniversary. Because I remember for the 10th one, kind of sometimes. But when there have been anniversaries that are dope. Because we got Generations, one of them.
Generations, then like the next, like 5 years later was Forces, which is like maybe you didn't
but
quite.
Also Mania.
Also Mania, yes. Mania, true.
Which is
I guess
I
don't
need.
I guess I didn't even really tie Mania to any sort of anniversary. It was just this new game, this new
they
sort
did.
Of,
it was the good Sonic
logo
game.
For Sonic. But I mean, even his 10th anniversary, that's when we got Adventure 2 and Sonic Advance, which was the first time Sonic was on Nintendo.
Yeah.
It was an awesome game.
Sonic fans are wilding, man. I mean, they deserve it. They deserve all the love, dude.
And it's Sonic's 30th this year. So well, Sonic Adventure Remake, Sonic Adventure 3.
Something in the works. They've talked about it before, and like, yeah, I assume something has to come out this year, except like obviously COVID reasons. But then there's the movie February, which is close enough for me to count it. The movie sequel.
Oh,
next year.
That's next year. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. God, anniversaries are stupid.
They're all extreme. Like Mario's still. It's still technically Mario's anniversary now. Right now, until the end of this month when he dies.
Yeah. Gotta love it.
Well, isn't the fifth? That's usually Mario Day, right? What are we doing?
March,
oh no, wait.
March
Mario
10th.
Day was March 10th. Sorry.
March 10th. Yeah. March 10th is Mario.
I don't know why I was thinking 3-5, and then I was like, oh, that's only 2010, though.
But I did. Super Mario 35 is only available to the end of this month, and collection is only available to buy until the end of this month. Mario dies at the end of this month, like Imran.
Yeah. Well, for March 10th, it's going to be Blessing and Janet Garcia on Games Daily. And when I hit up Janet, I wasn't paying attention to Mario Day. And she says, okay, Mario Day, I'm going to go big. So I told Blessing he had company permission to expense a Mario suit to wear.
He's gonna do a Donkey Kong some bullshit.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, Barrett, if you throw up the tweet I just did, if everybody wants to go to my Twitter account, we can start. I've started the ball rolling. Hey, at EOSP and at Geo Corsi, 10th anniversary of Vita in Japan this year. What are we doing to celebrate? So
hell yeah,
I got you, Tim. Thanks for the idea. Thank we got you. This.
Yeah, that's
why
great.
Is there not a Donkey Kong anniversary? Like
it's the 40th anniversary of Donkey Kong this year.
Why haven't they released Donkey Kong 94 out on something modern? All the Donkey Kong Country games.
I guess they're on Switch.
They are on Switch. Finally.
Yeah.
But that is my biggest thing with this is because I've been like trying to rattle my brain of like, why am I mad at Mario 3D All-Stars? But I want Pokemon to just fucking do the same thing that I was mad about before. Mario All-Stars, not 3D. And the answer is, it's just Nintendo does such a bad job of allowing you to play old games on new things. Even if I could have played the original Pokemon games on 3DS, you know, I still can. But it's like, why can't I on Switch? You know, why can't we? Why don't we have?
Just let me. These are easy wins.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, these are such easy wins.
Crash and Spyro sold so well, and like Mario 3D All Stars sold so well. You could, if you want to, give something the full remake treatment, and it will sell well. If you don't want to do that, you could toss ROMs on a cart, and it will still sell really fucking well. So like, you have so many available paths to get this to people, and for people to give you money. I don't understand the hesitancy about so much of it. Like in anniversaries in general, not just Nintendo. Like, is Sony going to acknowledge Sly Cooper when its time comes up? Probably not. But I would love for more modern Sly Cooper collection that includes 4 on it. Like, wouldn't it be cool if Microsoft for the 20th Halo anniversary to just put every big Xbox games on backwards compatibility? Like, put Dead or Alive 2, put Brute Force, put all that stuff on there. And like,
that's
maybe
a great idea, man.
Like, all that stuff would be good. And it's like, I'm not going to say it's trivial. I imagine it takes some work, but I'm sure it justifies the investment.
Yeah. I mean, I want Donkey Kong 94 on Switch. That'd be awesome.
Hell yes. That game rocked.
It really, really did, man. A lot of anniversaries this year. Resident Evil's 25th, Street Fighter 2's 30th, Dragon Quest 35th, Crash Bandicoot's 25th, Tomb Raider's 25th. It's like, damn, guys. It's Metroid's 35th. Imran, do we see something Metroid this year?
See, maybe. Get no.
Not even the trilogy? Do you think we'll get the trilogy on Switch?
When you say something Metroid, I bet we do get something Metroid this year. I don't think we get Prime 4.
Tim, here's the thing, Metroid, you're getting. You can buy a fucking pin and a magnet.
Wow,
that's
a magnet?
What you're getting. And that's here's what we're getting to celebrate
here,
Samus.
Here are the old Metroid games on Super Nintendo Online and regular Nintendo Online. There you go. They're still there. You can still play them. Here's a reminder. Fuck you. Buy Nintendo Switch Online.
We don't care about our fans, is what they say.
Damn. Put just Metroid like audio listeners with Andy.
And Metroid Zero Mission on Switch Online somehow.
Seriously. Like, literally, like, that would be such a nice gesture. Just figure that out, even. But
like, I if it's a matter of spending just... Look at the modding community who has put your games everywhere. You know, like, this isn't a matter of capability. You know, it's just these are just such easy wins. And I don't understand their mindset whenever they are approaching these things that could just make the public happy, you know, because you're not putting out really much new shit anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. I just don't get it, man.
So what do we want with video game anniversaries? Put everything everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with just that.
Remind me of why I rebuy the old stuff we had.
With that, this has been the Kind of Funny Games cast. Imran, thank you very much for joining us. If you are a patreon.com/kindoffunnygames silver member or above, we're about to do the exclusive post show. So stay tuned for that. Until next time, love you guys.